This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Digital Underground Sex Packets. Okay, so let's see a description of the album. All right, so it says Digital Underground's debut album, Sex Packets, is a landmark in hip-hop, blending humor, funk, and creativity into a genre-defying masterpiece. Released in 1990, the album is heavily influenced by P-Funk sound of Parliament Funkadelic, led by the charismatic Shock G and his alter ego Humpty Hump. The group's playful, irreverent style is on full display, along with innovative sampling and production that set it apart from the gangster rap dominating the era. The album's concept revolves around fictional sex packets, a satirical sci-fi invention offering a hallucinogenic sexual experience. This loose narrative underpins the project, showcasing Digital Underground's knack for storytelling and world-building. Standout tracks include the massive hit The Humpty Dance, an infectious party anthem known for its funky bassline and hilarious lyrics, and Do What You Like, a carefree track encouraging listeners to embrace self-expression. Beyond the humor, tracks like Packet Man and Freaks of the Industry showcase clever wordplay, while the production layers samples from funk legends like George Clinton and Bootsy Collins to create a rich sonic tapestry. Sex Packets is both a celebration of funk's legacy and a bold leap forward for hip-hop, cementing Digital Underground as pioneers of their time. Okay, so yeah, so this was released on March 20th, 1990. The genre is hip-hop, and the label is Tommy Boy and Warner Brothers, and produced by the Digital Underground. And there's 14 tracks on the song, and side one and side two is pretty divided evenly. I believe it's the same track listing. Oh, it's not quite the same track listing as the CD. I think we'll probably be listening to the CD version. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, the album starts with the title The Humpty Dance, and side one ends with The Danger Zone. So we've linked the album in the show notes, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service to both Apple and Spotify. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, we'll take a break at that halfway point and discuss the album at the halfway mark. And okay, so here we go. Here is the first song on the album, The Humpty Dance. Well, let's check it out. Okay, and ending side one with The Danger Zone. This is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding some of the songs are dragging on a little too much.
Yeah, I did notice that. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm enjoying it sometimes. Sometimes I think it's actually a lot of fun, and other times I think it's kind of dumb. I think the bass playing on it is like, that's one intense bass sound. It's pretty good.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, the instrumentals on this is there's nothing to complain about there, really. I mean, it's
I kind of think it was interesting when they sampled Jimi Hendrix on the Way We Swing. It was basically that was the main sample throughout the song was from the Band of Gypsies album, which I recognize. I've got that. So
yeah, I did notice that as well. Yeah, there's some really good the beats are good. And yeah, the like mixing like the funk and jazz elements, and just sort of blending everything together. I mean, it's all working really well. And yeah, some of the lyrics are kind of dumb. I think there's a reason for that, and we'll get into that when I talk about some of the facts that I found about the album. But yeah, my main thing is. The songs are just dragging on too long. I kept thinking, okay, and I don't remember what song it was. Might have been Gutfest 89, where I thought, okay, this is where the song is going to end. And it went on for another minute and there was another verse. I'm like, okay, I don't know if this is necessary. Like, it wasn't bad. Like, it's not bad. It's just, you know, it just could be trimmed down a little bit. It's like, this could be, and it's not like the song is really going anywhere in those extended sort of, it's the same sort of beat, it's the same loop over and over. So it's not
I'm wondering if that's for club use.
It could be. It very well could be, but you know, usually if they would have like a club remix for it, and that would be the club version. That would have the longer sort of instrumental breaks and things like that. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad music or anything like that. It's just like, okay, this is kind of going on too long. Like, okay, I get it. I get what you're doing. Yeah, cool. Like it. I'm on board. Everything's cool. Let's move on to the next one. Like if you're going to do that, if you're just going to keep repeating it, let's move on to the next one. If you're not going to go, I don't mind a long song, but you know, if it's not going to go anywhere,
put some more dynamics in it. Yeah, I agree. I guess it's just not the genre for that, but then it's not the genre for really long songs then, I guess. So, because it's just, I don't know. Cause yeah, you would want something to sort of mix it up or break it up somehow. And I'm not sure how they do it,
they
needed to do it.
Well, I mean, they could. Really, what they could do is like, you know, just sort of maybe drop some instruments out, and like maybe have just a drum break for a couple of bars, and then build it back up, or you know, maybe throw in some new samples there, change the whole thing altogether, bring it back to the original, like. There are some things they can do within there to make it a little more interesting. But that's, I don't know. I don't know if I'm just being nitpicky. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I do find some of the songs where they did drag. Sometimes the subject matter was kind of dumb. Sometimes it was kind of funny. I like the Underwater Rhymes one. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, I think that was probably my favorite track so far. But, you know, having said that, The album was pretty well received critically and commercially at the time. It was released in the spring of 1990, following the success of its two lead singles, Do What You Like, a moderate club hit, followed by The Humpty Dance, which reached number 11 on the pop chart. You know, Newsday noted that as the romantic and in the end, middle-brow self-consciousness of the artist seeps into hip-hop, Digital Underground turns turns it on its head, shuffling the groovy indistinguishably, shuffling the goofy indistinguishably from the avant-garde, which is like, that's kind of the perfect description for this.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be pretty avant-garde at times. It was pretty, it's obviously not taking itself too seriously. And it is a little experimental in some instances. But it could be a little juvenile at times, I think.
Yeah, this is their debut album. And I think maybe like, and it's they produced it themselves. So I think that has a lot to do with it too. Like, they don't have an outside producer coming in and saying, "Hey, you know, let's streamline this a little bit. Let's work on the lyrics. You know, let's, you know, cut some of these songs down a little bit." You know, and I honestly don't really know much about hip hop to really say, like, if this were to be released today, would it really do anything? I don't know. I want to say maybe not.
It's interesting because hip hop has sort of evolved so much over the years that it just doesn't sound like this anymore. Like even hip hop could really use a retro movement, I think. In fact, I think it's kind of gasping for one, at least to my ears anyway, because a lot of it just seems very flat to me and really needs something to revive it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I do.
Actually going in the direction that this was going in, or say what you know, like Grandmaster Flash or the Beastie Boys were sort of doing would be kind of fun. Make it fun again. No, don't make it just, I don't know what the word is. It's just, I don't know. It's missing that spark.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. You know, country music is the same way, you know. It's just gotten so watered down and commercial. And but, you know, I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. So the album is actually, it does have a concept. And so this might explain some of the more juvenile lyrics. Is the album is based on a fictional sci-fi concept of sex packets, which are imaginary pills that provide a virtual sexual experience. This idea was partly inspired by futuristic storytelling and satirical commentary on society's obsession with instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting that they were talking about that in 1990.
Yeah.
Which, and, you know, now it's like
turbocharged.
Right.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. That does sort of explain sort of the juvenile experiences, especially Gutfest 89. I thought that one was a little bit over the top.
Yeah, but if you can imagine that song, like, imagine that in like a sci-fi, like cyberpunk kind of movie.
Yeah,
if you can imagine maybe that scene, it kind of makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
It still might be juvenile, but, you know.
But I guess if your concept is going to revolve around sex or something like that, it's definitely sort of an interesting take on sex, but it's I guess you can't help but be a little bit juvenile, at least in this setting, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do agree with that. Yeah. You know, another thing is the Digital Underground was heavily influenced by Parliament Funkadelic, which we know, and the album is packed with samples from P-Funk's music. Shock G even referred to the group's sound as a continuation of P-Funk's legacy, bridging the gap between 1970s funk and 1990s hip-hop. Which, yeah, I mean, as much as I was complaining about the songs being too long, it really is funky, and it really sort of like when funk kind of went away in the early 80s, this sort of like, this kind of brought it back. And it's sort of like, if it had continued, it did continue, but it wasn't popular.
Well, it's sort of, yeah, it's true. I've actually found, you know, little snippets here and there of funk from the 80s. And in fact, it gets like sampled all the time in like, vaporwave and stuff like that.
You know, I would say that Prince sort of continued funk into the 80s.
Prince did, but even thinking about like people like Grandmaster Flash and other rap and hip hop artists of the time is sort of what the continuation of funk really was. And Prince was kind of in that too. He wasn't really what you would call rap or hip hop, but he definitely used elements of it. But yeah, there was stuff that was, you know, I would call straight funk, and it was very funky and was almost like a pop structure sort of thing, more so than say what Prince was doing. If you like do a deep dive on try to figure out where samples and vaporwave come from, you'll come up with a lot of interesting things. So
another one is the Humpty Dance. One of the album's standout tracks became a massive hit, peaking at number 11 on the Billboard Hot 100 and earning the platinum certification. Its funky bassline has been sampled in over 100 other songs, making it one of the most influential tracks in hip hop history. Kind of cool.
I've never heard it before.
No, neither had I. Shock G performed as both himself and his alter ego Humpty Hump on the album. The Humpty character, with his iconic Groucho Marx glasses and fake nose, became an iconic figure in hip-hop, adding a comedic and theatrical layer to the group's persona.
Okay, that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Another one that I thought this was kind of cool is that Tupac Shakur, who was a backup dancer and roadie for the Digital Underground at the time, made an uncredited appearance in the group's music videos and started his career with them shortly after the album's release. His connection to Digital Underground is often noted as the launchpad for his late legendary career.
Interesting.
So they certainly were pretty significant for hip-hop in the 90s.
Yeah, I guess they were.
But yeah, so I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do, let's hear from our friends over at the Album Nerds Podcast. So,
drop the needle on the Album Nerds Podcast.
It's just the Album Nerds.
Just Album Nerds.
Join Andy, Don, and Dude each week as they discuss albums from themes chosen by the Wheel of Musical Discovery.
Heavy metal guitar virtuosos.
Double albums.
MTV Raps.
Punk rock.
The top 10 albums of 1986.
Uncover hidden gems, revisit classics, and hear fresh takes on your favorite records.
Exile on Main Street.
Some of what country music can do best is that storytelling.
This is a messy album, for sure.
I just want to hear Floyd in everything, I think.
Born in the USA.
And it sounds great overall as an album. I'm just not like moved by it.
The Album Nerds Podcast. Three guys talking music.
This is what we call freestyling.
Yes. That's what we call freestyling. No one else would call it that. Other people would call it find another podcast to listen to. Okay, so
give it a spin wherever you find podcasts and albumnerds.com.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
All right. And ending the album with Packet Reprise. This is the second half was interesting. A little more interesting than the first half, I think.
Yeah, I think I agree. Although I think the first half had a couple of the better songs, but the second half had the concept album part.
Yeah, I agree. I think I found the first half. Okay, this is going to be complicated.
That's okay.
The first half had the better songs, but they were a little too long for my taste. But the second half was more interesting because I was finding myself getting drawn into the story or the concept of the album, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
I think I can see how this was a significant album and sort of how it sort of changed the way hip hop was. Because, you know, 1989, hip hop was sort of more, it was in a transition period at that time.
Transition period. There was still an underground element to it, but it was definitely gaining in popularity. It had sort of reached the zeitgeist of the time, but it still wasn't like mainstream radio, at least in most places. Maybe in like LA and New York and stuff like that, there was probably dedicated radio stations and they were very popular. But, you go to most places and it was still very much a novelty in some ways.
Yeah. And, and stuff like this sort of it always was a serious art form, but it sort of made, like in the 90s, I feel like it was taken more seriously by the mainstream as a serious art form. And I think this album sort of helped that along.
By the time the 90s wrapped up, hip-hop and rap and whatnot were all very much mainstream.
Yeah, and so I think, the cultural significance of this album, I don't think we can point to this album as being the turning point, but it definitely is part of it. And I think it definitely sort of shaped and influenced the sound that would come in the following years, for sure.
Yeah, it actually sounds more like an album from like the mid-90s than it does 1990.
Yeah, it really does.
Because it doesn't sound like the Beastie Boys or something like that. It sounds a little bit fresher than that.
Yeah, when we did Paul's Boutique, that still sounded like, late 80s hip-hop to me.
Hip-hop,
yeah. And it was. It came out in 89. That's the thing. Like, when we listen to... When you listen to an album and someone says, oh yeah, well, if you like that, you should listen to this because they were the first ones to do that. Like when we listened to that, the Kraftwerk album, it blew my mind hearing that stuff from the 70s because it's like, no, this is the 80s. But no, they invented that sound. So they're doing it like 5 years before. So it's the same thing here. It's like, no, this doesn't sound like 1990. This sounds like 1995. That's the thing is there. I don't think they're necessarily trying. And most people who invent genres don't really know they're inventing a genre. They're just doing what they do.
Exactly. No, it's true. Very rarely do I think someone's actually going to be, I'm going to like invent a genre and it's going to be the next big thing. Like make that conscious thought. Maybe they do, but it seems like such a long shot. You basically just kind of go out, you're like, oh, I've got an idea for this. And then it just sort of snowballs from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think they were one of those people that probably didn't know they were going to set the sound for the coming decade. They were just making an album the best way they knew how, really. So this brings us to, what would be your three like favorite songs on the album?
Yeah, I kind of like The Way We Swing. Underwater Rhymes, and Do What You Like, I guess.
I would have to go with, Underwater Rhymes as well. I think Rhyming on the Funk, even though it was a little long. Okay. I did like that song. And then I would have to go with Packet Man.
Okay.
That was pretty fun. So yeah, those would be my choices. So that brings us to the question is, would you listen to this album again?
I think I'd listen to parts of it. I don't know if I'd sit and listen to it as a whole because it is so long.
Yeah, that's kind of the way that I feel. Like there are some songs on here that I would for sure like to hear again. And maybe the second side with like the second side is almost kind of like the second side of Abbey Road, where it's like all the songs sort of work together. So I would probably listen to that again. But I agree. I don't think I would listen to the whole album from start to finish again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just personal.
Exactly. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any of these episodes. And leave a rating and review because it really helps out the show and helps us grow. And if you feel inclined, you want to help out the show, you can go to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You can get lots of cool stuff there. Like you can get these episodes the day before they go live. And you can also visit the website. Go to polyphonicpress.com. You can get different updates and you can listen to the back catalog of all the episodes that we've done. And I think that pretty much does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.